Good morning, Reality Church. How are you guys doing? How are your dads doing? You doing all right? All right. Happy Father's Day. I'm actually alone at my house. I've got my five girls there, and Amy's actually in Florida, which means we're postponing Father's Day for a week, obviously, because that's too much pressure on the girls. But anyway, I'm having a good day so far. Hope you guys got some bacon, or if you didn't, maybe you can get some on your way out. We are on week four of a 10-week series called The Intentionals. My name is Lance Birch. I'm one of the pastors here at Reality Church, and if you are here because maybe you saw our booth at Papillion Days, or maybe you saw our float, and you got maybe a flyer handed to you, hey, I'm so glad you made the choice to be here. We're glad that you, and we know you could be a lot of different places, but you made the choice to be here, so welcome from the front. But we are on week four of a series where we're taking a look at Old Testament characters and how when you look at these Old Testament characters, you usually say, well, they're superhuman. These people are just super spiritual, and I could never attain their level of spirituality, so I'm just going to give up. But really, when you take an honest look at them and you read the Bible and you actually look at the stories, you'll find that they're bent and they're broken and they're wounded and they've got scars, just like you and me. And so, and by the way, most of them didn't know that their lives were being recorded, right? So they were just going through life. They were living their lives based on what they had hope in, which was God. And they didn't know that people were watching them. It's kind of like an episode of, you know, what would you do? Maybe you watch this. There is this show where they set up this dilemma for people where they're actually watching with cameras. Like they'll have somebody walking in front of a guy and he'll drop like $1,000 in an envelope and he just walks on. The other person comes, they pick it up, they look inside, there's $1,000 in there. I mean, what would you do? This is the name of the show. So they have this moral dilemma. Should I keep it? I mean, I could spend $1,000 on a lot of really cool stuff, or I give it back. And when they give it back, they rush up and they say, excuse me, you dropped this, it's $1,000. And the guy says, well, thank you. But then John Quinones and the whole camera crew comes out and they give the guy an immediate pat on the back and they say, way to go, you did the right thing. So let me ask you a question. Is that the way life works for you? When you do really good things, I mean, don't you kind of wish it would be like that? Like you're on national television, you know, immediately, you know, hi, I'm the guy that returned, you know, I'm cool like that. But life doesn't work out that way. You know, and that's why life is confusing, I think, because sometimes you do the right thing. I do the right thing. We do the right thing. And it never turns out like that. Nobody's patting us on the back. And in fact, sometimes it blows up in our face. We don't live in a world, and this is a really dangerous lie, we don't live in a world where every good deed we do gets immediately applauded, immediately gets a pat on the back. We live in a confusing world, don't we? Don't we live in a world that's broken and makes us scratch our head more than it makes us, you know, jump up and say, yeah? We live in a world where a group of people, to honor their God, gathered on a Wednesday night in a church. We live in a world where those people welcomed in a stranger and said, you can sit among us, you can pray with us, you can be here with us. And an hour later, that stranger gets up and shoots and kills nine of them. We live in that world where you don't get a pat on the back every time you're doing the right thing, where sometimes doing the right thing has you in the place of incredible danger. That's the world we live in. It's not like an episode, a long, drawn-out episode of What Would You Do? Where we do the right thing and immediately we get a pat on the back or applause or congratulations. Here comes Quinones with some cameras and, you know, and some really good compliments. No, our life here comes with danger. Not necessarily a promise from God that if we do the right thing, His protection and blessing are going to be on us in this life. His favor and His gifts, all that stuff. Is that the way life works for you? Because it didn't work that way. It doesn't work that way now, and it didn't work that way if you read the Bible, if you really read it, and you don't listen to a preacher who says, if you follow God, you're going to be healthy and wealthy and all that. If you really read the Bible, you find that people who follow God often find themselves in very dangerous, life-threatening situations. It's not new. It's been here forever because we live in a broken world. It goes all the way back to Adam and Eve. This world is fallen, and it's a dangerous place. Daniel knew it. We're going to look at a story about a man named Daniel. Now, Daniel grew up in a town called Jerusalem. Maybe you've heard of it. And about the age of 14, Babylon came in, conquered Israel, and picked out the best and brightest among Israel. And among those was about 13 or 14-year-old Daniel. When we read the Bible and we just read the stories and we just say, okay, Daniel was transported to Babylon, he was 13, 14 years old. Family gone. Ripped out of one culture. No language commonalities at all. Put smack dab into another culture. New gods, new team of people around him, training him. He was isolated, separated from everything he had used to know at about the age of 13 or 14. He's there for years. You may have heard of some of the other people that were transported with him, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they were in a new culture, surrounded by people that they didn't know for years. And Daniel excelled. He got positions of leadership. And when we look at this story in Daniel chapter 6, you can call it up on your device. We're going to have some of the scriptures up here, but not all of them. He has reached the age of 80 plus. And right before the story that we're about to read, he had an interesting scenario that brought in a new leader. Have you guys ever heard the expression, the handwriting's on the wall? He didn't see the handwriting on the wall. Well, that's actually from the Bible. There was a king named Belshazzar who was throwing a banquet, and he, in the middle of this banquet, thought, you know, this is really cool, but it could be cooler, so let's get the golden goblets and the serving utensils from that we stole from the temple in Jerusalem, and we'll use those. We'll drink wine out of that. So he sent his servants, and they went and got them. And as soon as they started drinking out of these goblets that were taken from the temple, an angel messenger said, wrote on the wall and wrote in a language that nobody could understand in the room. And they sent for Daniel because they knew Daniel was smart. They knew Daniel had connections to the spiritual realm. That's probably the way they thought of it. He actually had a connection to his God. And he looked at, Daniel was brought in and he looked at it and he said, okay, I'll tell you what it means, but it's not good news. And he said, just read it to me. And he said, here's what it says. You have been measured and found wanting. Bad news, Belshazzar. Your kingdom is going to be taken from you tonight, immediately. And in the Bible, it says, and that night, Belshazzar died. They were attacked. There was the Medes took over. Darius the Mede was put in charge. And not 2 weeks or 2 months, just very short time later, we find what's going on in Daniel chapter 6. Darius, once he got into power, he divided his kingdom up into 120 provinces. And he sat like satraps over each, like a governor, some, you know, kind of a guy to handle what's going on in each province. And over all of those people, he had three really high-level officers. Daniel was one of those officers. And Daniel was the best. In verse 3, Daniel chapter 6, verse 3, it says, Daniel soon proved himself more capable than all of the other administrators and high officers. You ever worked with someone like that? Isn't it fun? They're just better than everybody, and they do everything better than everybody. That was Daniel. He was better than everybody. And because of Daniel's great ability, he was skilled, the king made plans to place him over the entire empire. The king was planning to place Daniel as the number two position in the entire kingdom. He was good at his job, really, really good, and maybe you're good at your job. He was trained. He had connections. He was at it for 70 years. He was there in Babylon. He was exceptional, an exceptional man. But remember, in all of that, don't forget the fact that he was isolated. Daniel probably didn't even have that strong a connection with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego because he was in the upper, you know, the upper level of leadership here in Babylon. He only had contact with those who were also in the upper level leadership here in Babylon. He was isolated from his family, isolated from his friends, isolated from his faith community. He had a lot of enemies around him, and maybe he didn't even know it. And this happens to us. Have you guys ever been in one of those environments? You got hired on somewhere. Maybe you excelled, or maybe you didn't. Maybe you're just working, and it's a total different culture, and you're trying to acclimate yourself. And before you know it, maybe you even have enemies in that culture, guys, and then you don't know it. Daniel did. He had some people who were actively working against him. They didn't like him. Why? Well, because Darius really liked him. The big boss really liked Daniel. The problem was they couldn't find anything on him. Tell me how you would do if this. They actually like spied on him, tried to find out something. What's wrong with this guy? They looked at him for months, you know, and they said, no, we can't find anything. You know, this guy, he's got integrity. How would you do under that scrutiny? He wasn't corrupt, he was good, and that got to them. They couldn't find anything to criticize or condemn him. But remember, amidst all that, here was a guy that was alone. He was isolated. And maybe you felt that way. Maybe you felt in a context, maybe when you get into a new family or you move to a new location, you can feel isolated. Has God forgotten me? Daniel, amidst all that, according to them, was like flawless. So they attacked the one thing that they could to get to him. They attacked his religious identity. They went for the core, right? They all agreed to go to the king. They went to Darius and they said, hey, king, oh, Darius, live forever. They were kind of sucking up to the king. And they said, Darius, you're trying to solidify your power. So here's what you should do. We all agree, by the way, all of the officials, all the satraps, all the governors, all everybody, all the high officials, we all agree that you should make a law that over the next 30 days, if anyone prays to any god other than you, any human or our god, that they should be thrown in the lion's den. And Darius says, wow, kind of drunk with power maybe. He says, that sounds like a pretty good rule. All right. And they said, but let's make it a special rule, a special law, a law of the Medes and Persians, which cannot be revoked. Once you sign it, if anyone prays to anyone other than you for the next 30 days, they're killed. And Darius goes, all right, that sounds all right. So you all agree? Yeah, we all agree. All right, well, I'll do it. Uh-oh. So now Daniel has a problem. Daniel has a moral dilemma. This is really a what would you do moment. See, if the guys who were conspiring against Daniel probably thought along two lines, that they were okay with Daniel worshiping another god. In fact, Babylon had all kinds of gods. So that's okay. But they had a misunderstanding of what gods were. So they thought two things. Number one, if he prays, we'll kill him. But number two, if he doesn't pray, his god will kill him. So we've got him either way. Because they didn't understand what God was. They don't understand who God is. So they figure, we've got him now. They were conspiring against Daniel for no good reason. The question was, will Daniel remain faithful to his hope and his God, or would he settle for something less? See, the stories in Daniel of these exiles, they're not primarily about how to maintain your purity in a pagan culture. I mean, there's that, it's in there. But that's not primarily what they're about. They're primarily about one person's faithfulness in maintaining his hope in God alone. Where is Daniel's hope going to be? See, these exiles, they maintain their hope in a promise-keeping God in the most unlikely place. And maybe you've been asked to do that, where your situation changed and just life is dark and things aren't working out. And you're asked, you come into church and somebody stands up here and they ask you to hope in God. That's the situation that the exiles and Daniel specifically found himself in. This is not about, understand this, this story is not about one guy who was so morally pure that when bad things happened, God protected him. God kept him from being hurt. No, it's not about that. It's about one man who is faced with temptation to let go of his hope in the promise-keeping God and turn to hope in this king named Darius. There's the story. Is he going to trust something less than God? Is he going to trust something less dangerous, something more comfortable? Is he going to turn away from his hope in God? Is he going to turn to hope in Darius? And there's the temptation. That's Daniel's choice. And that's our choice. You always have the choice. Every day, what am I going to place my hope in? What is my life going to be built around? What am I placing all of my energy and force and intelligence? Where am I going? What am I placing all my hope in? And Daniel had that choice just like you do. And there is your, and there is my, what would you do moment. I wonder what we would choose in this case. Because usually the church chooses one of two roads. The one is to go underground, all right, I'm a Christian, but nobody has to know it. I'm going to go underground. It's going to be my little secret identity, my coworker. I mean, I go to reality church, but if I told my coworkers I go to reality church, they would scratch their head a little bit. They don't know it. I talk like them. I, you know, act like them. I do relationships like them. If somebody lies about me, I get even just like them. I do everything like them. I'm going underground. It's my secret identity. That's one way. The other extreme is to go loud and go proud. Go vocal and go strong. Protest, you know, form a club that says that, you know, this culture's horrible. We're gonna defeat this culture and get really antagonistic. Daniel did neither one of those things. When Daniel learned that the law had been signed, and he knew that it had been signed, here's what he did. He went home and he knelt down as usual. As usual. This was his habit. As usual, in his upstairs room with its windows open toward Jerusalem. Now, that's not just put in there for no reason. This was Daniel's statement to say, I am who I am. You cannot change that. This is who I am, and my hope is somewhere else. Not in you, Darius, not in this law. Not in the protection that that law could give me if I prayed to you, but somewhere else. He prayed toward Jerusalem. Why? Because he knew that God had promised to restore things. God had promised to make things right. And so he said, God, I haven't given up on you. You're my hope. He didn't just do this once a day. Listen to this. He prayed three times a day, just as he had. What's that word right there? That was a good mumble. Let's try it one more time. What was that word? One, two, three. Always, yeah, just as he has always done, giving thanks to God. His hope was in God. Notice the things that Daniel did not do. He did not change his Facebook status, which is world-changing, right? If you ever get really upset about something, change your Facebook status. Immediately world change. He didn't tweet out a protest. He didn't form a protest club. He just continued with his habit. He just continued with his habit because his habits were built around, remember, his hope. He knew from Jeremiah, from Ezekiel, from Isaiah, and he had access to those manuscripts, even in Babylon. He knew there would one day be a new and better king than Darius. He knew that there would be one day a better priest, a better sacrifice. Daniel was the leader of a group of people whose story is just like ours. They were in a place and in a culture, but their souls were rooted in another country. We sing the songs and we tell the stories to remind us of the hope that we have. And we did that this morning. They did the same thing. They were constantly reminding each other of what? Of the hope that they have. This wasn't just Daniel's habit. This was his hope. But that was his hope. And remember, you build your habits around your hope. That's how you do life. Your habits right now, the things you do on a daily basis, they are built around your hope. They're built around the things that you think are going to be meaningful in your life, the things that are going to make your life worth living. Everything you're doing right now, think about your addictions and the things that you kind of habitually do. You do those things because they're connected to what you hope in. Whatever habits you have, they reveal your hope. See, if Daniel's hope had been in his ability to remain pure in a pagan culture, and we've got a lot of Christians and churches that are kind of like this, then he would have exiled himself from the exile. He would have teamed up with other people, and they would have, you know, wanted nothing to do with Babylon. They would have formed this exclusive club with a membership bar set so high, like as high as you could possibly set it, and they would become this little distinct unit that was completely separate from Babylonian culture. If he wanted to remain pure and a pagan, if that was his main goal, or if his main goal was his comfort, then what would his choice have been? He would have just thrown off his Jewishness. He would have acclimated himself to all things Babylonian. He would have looked like them, talked like them, done everything like someone who had been raised in the Babylonian culture. He would have abandoned his old habits. Why? Because his hope had changed. But then, who would be able to speak against the idolatry of Babylon? See, to ask Daniel to abandon his prayer, his daily prayers to God, was to ask him to abandon his hope. His hope that had fueled him his entire life. His hope that had given him a reason to be alive. A filter for everything that he was going through. A pointer towards Jerusalem. A weapon against despair. And it gave him the ability to say to Darius and to say to everybody, do whatever you want. But you can't stop God from keeping his promises to me. When he was completely isolated, when his life was in danger, Daniel focused on his hope. And so do you. No matter what, you focus on your hope. You can't help it. And your habits actually get built around that hope. And if your hope is in your paycheck, then you will, without even thinking about it really, let the years go by and slowly abandon your family and relationships in order to pursue security and all that you think your paycheck is going to give you. Your heart rate goes up when your savings account goes down to a certain amount. Why? Because not because of the reason you think, it's because that's your God. And your God is losing power. And you get upset because your hope is invested in that and your habits are built around that. If your goal is pleasure, if your hope is put in pleasure, then you're going to lose relationships and hurt people because it's all about you and whatever it is, that next thing, that next high, that next thing that makes you feel good, it doesn't matter who you step on, it doesn't matter who you hurt, you're going to go for that because your hope is in pleasure and your habits are built around that. If your hope is in beauty, your own personal beauty, then you're going to make some bad financial positions involving financial decisions involving stretching your skin out. And eventually, you're going to be very disappointed, by the way. Have you seen the pictures of people, like, later on? Okay. Sorry if it got awkward in here for a little bit. But you're going to be disappointed, all right? It's going to get bad. Here's the deal. You build your habits around your hope. That's what you do. That's what I do. You build your habits around your hope. And in that way, your habits reveal your hope. Daniel built his habits around his hope, and that's why he was up there 3 times a day praying. Now, the people who saw him praying went immediately to Darius, and they said, hey, you remember that law you signed? And he said, yeah, you know what? Thank you guys for thinking about that. That was really encouraging. And they said, yeah, well, Daniel is praying to another God. And Darius went, oh, I didn't mean for that to happen. And he was very upset. He loved Daniel. He was going to, you know, raise Daniel to the second highest position in the land. So immediately, Darius started trying to think of a way to get Daniel out of it. He started trying to come up with, well, is there any clause? Is there something? He worked on this all day, and there was no way to get Daniel out of this. Sundown was coming, and so the officials came back, and they said, you've really not handled the whole Daniel situation? And Darius reluctantly said, okay, arrest him, throw him in the lion's den. And they did. They threw him in the lion's den. And Darius that night could not eat or sleep. He was all wound up. He was hoping in Daniel's God, but he didn't have any, you know, security. Daniel didn't have any security. He didn't know whether he was going to live or die. And the next morning, after a sleepless night, Darius rushes to what was going to be Daniel's tomb. Here's Daniel, a righteous man, convicted because those in authority wanted to, you know, falsely accuse him. He was executed from a king who didn't even really want to execute him. And when they rolled the stone over what would be his tomb, Darius sealed it with his own seal. Sound familiar a little bit? And on that day, that first day, he rushes to the tomb, and this is what he says, Daniel, servant of the living God, was your God whom you served so faithfully able to rescue you from the lion? Was your God able to save you? And then the answer came. Oh, Darius, live forever. May you live forever. May you live long. I'm fine. Basically, he said, I'm okay. But if it's okay with you, get me out of here. No, he just said, I'm okay. Daniel, in that lion's den, got to experience something that you and I get to experience sometimes. We get to experience every once in a while on earth exactly what it looks like when God's rule is in charge, when he reigns. We get little images of that. When we're faithful, we get to see that. There was no guarantee that Daniel was going to live, but he got to see what Isaiah 11:6 talked about, where the lion will lay down with the lamb, and there will be complete peace. Everything will be restored. Daniel had that sort of hope. The story gets a little brutal after that, okay? Darius then says, where were the guys that accused Daniel again? Yeah, okay, well, let's throw them in the lion's den. They thought that would be a fun idea, so let's see them and their wives and their children. Yeah, it gets a little brutal. That's the kind of culture, by the way, that Daniel was raised in. And so the Bible says that the lions grabbed them even before they hit the ground and ripped them apart. So all of us live in this world, this culture. And the question comes to all of us, in your work environment, in your family environment, where are you going to place your hope? There is only one place to get the hope that Daniel had. See, here's what we don't take away from this story. We don't take this away. If you stand up for God, he will deliver you from the lions in your life. Oh, that will really preach. I mean, I can see myself preaching. If you place your hope in God, he will deliver you from the lions in your life. That could get an amen. Unfortunately, that's not what this Bible story is teaching at all. That makes no sense, in fact. I mean, think about what just happened this week at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina. The lion walked right into church. They welcomed him in, graciously welcomed him in. And he got up at one point after about an hour and killed nine. That doesn't make any sense then. But it also doesn't make any sense in light of a much larger story, which is the gospel. It's contrary to the message of the gospel. Jesus prayed in the garden, and he was delivered to the lions. And you know what the lions did to Jesus? They devoured him. He took his stand. He was delivered to the lions, and they crucified him. We have a new and better Daniel. He entered the den of God's judgment, and he took it all for us. See, Jesus on the cross was facing the lions for us. God treated Jesus on the cross the way that we deserve to be treated so that he could one day treat us the way that Jesus deserved to be treated, and that's the gospel. The gospel is that we are more bent and broken and flawed than we ever dared admit to anyone around us and even to ourselves. But we are more loved and accepted by God than we could ever dream or imagine. That is our hope. So before you start trying to change your habits, start at the root. Ask yourself this question: what is my hope? Because you build your habits around your hope. Your hope. We've been given a new hope that this upside-down world in which those kind of incredible criminal acts take place will one day be restored, renewed, redeemed, turned over, made right side up. That's our hope, and that's the only hope that can give us courage to face our own lions. It's not a guarantee that when we are faithful to God that he's going to deliver us from the lions. No, we live in this world, the real world. But our hope is one day God will make all the sad things come untrue. One day God will redeem, God will restore. And he proved it by sending his better Daniel to us and showing us, I've defeated the lions. They thought they devoured me. 3 days later, I still got out of the tomb. Daniel couldn't do that. He couldn't get killed by the lions and walk out. We have a new and better one. The only God who says, I've defeated the lions for you. Now, build your hope. Build your habits around that hope. And think about for just a second what your life would look like if you changed that one thing. Where is my hope? I'm going to build my habits around that.